Foundation and Earth by Isaac Asimov. Copyright 1986 by Nightfall Incorporated. This book is read by Larry A. McKeever. This book consists of 21 chapters and is 494 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Isaac Asimov has written over 340 books on a myriad of subjects. He has been called the Balzac of science and science fiction, Publishers Weekly, and is perhaps the best known and certainly the best loved of all SF authors. His wit, wisdom, and sense of wonder, Washington Post, have resulted in over 10 million copies of his work sold worldwide. His Foundation trilogy was awarded a Hugo as Best All-Time Science Fiction Series, and Foundation's Edge, the fourth entry in the series, also won a Hugo for Best Science Fiction Novel of 1982. Dr. Asimov lived in New York City. The Dedication. To the memory of Judy Lynn Del Rey, 1943 to 1986, a giant in mind and spirit. The story behind the Foundation. On August 1, 1941, when I was a lad of 21, I was a graduate student in chemistry at Columbia University and had been writing science fiction professionally for 3 years. I was hastening to see John Campbell, editor of Astounding, to whom I had sold 5 stories by then. I was anxious to tell him a new idea I had for a science fiction story. It was to write a historical novel of the future, to tell the story of the fall of the Galactic Empire. My enthusiasm must have been catching, for Campbell grew as excited as I was. He didn't want me to write a single story. He wanted a series of stories, in which the full history of the 1,000 years of turmoil between the fall of the First Galactic Empire and the rise of the Second Galactic Empire was to be outlined. It would all be illuminated by the science of psychohistory that Campbell and I thrashed out between us. The first story appeared in the May 1942 Astounding, and the second story appeared in the June 1942 issue. They were at once popular, and Campbell saw to it that I wrote 6 more stories before the end of the decade. The stories grew longer, too. The first one was only 12,000 words long. 2 of the last 3 stories were 50,000 words apiece. By the time the decade was over, I had grown tired of this, dropped it, and went on to other things. By then, however, various publishing houses were beginning to put out hardcover fiction books. One such house was a small, semi-professional firm, Gnome Press. They published my Foundation series in 3 volumes. Foundation, 1951, Foundation and Empire, 1952, and Second Foundation, 1953. The 3 books together came to be known as the Foundation Trilogy. The books did not do very well, for Gnome Press did not have the capital with which to advertise and promote them. I got neither statements nor royalties from them. In early 1961, my then editor at Doubleday, Timothy Seldes, told me he had received a request from a foreign publisher to reprint the Foundation book. Since they were not Doubleday books, he passed the request on to me. I shrugged my shoulders. "Not interested, Tim. I don't get royalties on those books." Seldes was horrified and instantly set about getting the rights to the books from Gnome Press, which was by that time moribund. And in August of that year, the books, along with iRobot, became Doubleday property. From that moment on, the Foundation series took off and began to earn increasing royalties. Doubleday published the trilogy in a single volume and distributed them through the Science Fiction Book Club. Because of that, the Foundation series became enormously well-known. In the 1966 World Science Fiction Convention held in Cleveland, the fans were asked to vote on a category of the best all-time series. It was the first time, and so far the last, the category had been included in the nominations for the Hugo Award. The Foundation trilogy won the award, which further added to the popularity of the series. Increasingly, fans kept asking me to continue the series. I was polite, but I kept refusing. Still, it fascinated me that people who had not yet been born when the series was begun had managed to become caught up in it. Doubleday, however, took the demands far more seriously than I did. They had humored me for 20 years, but as the demands kept growing in intensity and number, they finally lost patience. In 1981, they told me that I simply had to write another Foundation novel, and in order to sugarcoat the demand, offered me a contract at 10 times my usual advance. Nervously, I agreed. It had been 32 years since I had written a Foundation story, and now I was instructed to write one 140,000 words long, twice that of any of the earlier volumes, and nearly 3 times as long as any previous individual story. I reread the Foundation trilogy, and taking a deep breath, dived into the task. The fourth book of the series, Foundation's Edge, was published in October 1982, and then a very strange thing happened. It appeared in the New York Times bestseller list at once. In fact, it stayed on that list for 25 weeks, much to my utter astonishment. Nothing like that had ever happened to me. Doubleday at once signed me up to do additional novels, and I wrote 2 that were part of another series, the robot novels. And then it was time to return to the Foundation. So I wrote Foundation and Earth, which begins at the very moment that Foundation's Edge ends. And that is the book you now hold. It might help if you glanced over Foundation's Edge just to refresh your memory, but you don't have to. Foundation and Earth stands by itself. I hope you enjoy it. Isaac Asimov, New York City, 1986. Part 1. Gaia. Chapter 1. The Search Begins. 1. Why did I do it? Asked Golan Trevise. It wasn't a new question. Since he had arrived at Gaia, he had asked it of himself frequently. He would wake up from a sound sleep in the pleasant coolness of the night and find the question sounding noiselessly in his mind like a tiny drumbeat. Why did I do it? Why did I do it? Now, though, for the first time, he managed to ask it of Dome, the Ancient of Gaia. Dome was well aware of Trevise's tension, for he could sense the fabric of the councilman's mind. He did not respond to it. Gaia must in no way ever touch Trevise's mind. And the best way of remaining immune to the temptation was to painstakingly ignore what he sensed. Do what, Trev? He asked. He found it difficult to use more than one syllable in addressing a person, and it didn't matter. Trevise was growing somewhat used to that. The decision I made, said Trevise, choosing Gaia as the future. You were right to do so, said Dome, seated, his aged, deep-set eyes looking earnestly up at the man of the Foundation who was standing. You say I am right, said Trevise impatiently. Gaia, know you are. That's your worth to us. You have the capacity for making the right decision on incomplete data, and you have made the decision. You chose Gaia. You rejected the anarchy of a galactic empire built on the technology of the first Foundation, as well as the anarchy of a galactic empire built on the mentalics of the second Foundation. You decided that neither could be long stable. So you chose Gaia. Yes, said Trevise. Exactly. I chose Gaia, a superorganism. A whole planet with a mind and personality in common, so that one has to say, I, we, Gaia, as an invented pronoun to express the inexpressible. He paced the floor restlessly. And it will become eventually Galaxia, a super-superorganism embracing all the swarm of the Milky Way. He stopped, turned almost savagely on Dome, and said, I feel I'm right, as you feel it. You want the coming of Galaxia, and so are satisfied with the decision. There's something in me, however, that doesn't want it. And for that reason, I'm not satisfied to accept the rightness so easily. I want to know why I made the decision. I want to weigh and judge the rightness and be satisfied with it. Merely feeling right isn't enough. How can I know I am right? What is the device that makes me right? We, Gaia, do not know how it is to come to the right decision. Is it important to know that as long as we have the decision? You speak for the whole planet, do you? For the common consciousness of every dewdrop, of every pebble, of even the liquid central core of the planet? I do, and so can any portion of the planet in which the intensity of the common consciousness is great enough. And is all this consciousness satisfied to use me as a black box? Since the black box works, is it unimportant to know what is inside? That doesn't suit me. I don't enjoy being a black box. I want to know what's inside. I want to know how and why I chose Gaia and Galaxia as the future, so that I can rest and be at peace. But why do you dislike or distrust your decision so? Trevise drew a deep breath and said slowly, in a low and peaceful voice, "Because I don't want to be part of a superorganism. I don't want to be a dispensable part to be done away with whenever the superorganism judges that doing away would be for the good of the whole." Dome looked at Trevise thoughtfully. "Do you want to change your decision then, Trev? You can, you know." "I long to change the decision, but I can't do that merely because I dislike it. To do something now, I have to know whether the decision is wrong or right. It's not enough merely to feel right." "If you feel you are right, you are right." Always that slow, gentle voice that somehow made Trevise feel wilder by its very contrast with his own inner turmoil. Then Trevise said, in half a whisper, breaking out of the insoluble oscillation between feeling and knowing, "I must find Earth. Because it has something to do with this passionate need of yours to know. Because it is another problem that troubles me unbearably. And because I feel there is a connection between the two. Am I not a black box? I feel there is a connection. Isn't that enough to make you accept it a fact?" "Perhaps," said Dome with equanimity. "Granted, it is now thousands of years, 20,000 perhaps, since the people of the galaxy have concerned themselves with Earth. How is it possible that we have all forgotten our planet of origin?" 20,000 years is a longer time than you realize. There are many aspects of the early empire we know little of, many legends that are almost surely fictitious, but that we keep repeating and even believing because of lack of anything to substitute. And Earth is older than the empire. "But surely there are some records. My good friend Pellerat collects myths and legends of early Earth. Anything he can scrape up from any source. It is his profession, and, more important, his hobby. Those myths and legends are all there are. There are no actual records, no documents." "Documents, 20,000 years old. Things decay, perish, are destroyed through inefficiency or war." "But there should be records of the records. Copies, copies of the copies, and copies of the copies of the copies. Useful material much younger than 20 millennia. They have been removed. The Galactic Library at Trantor must have had documents concerning Earth. Those documents are referred to in known historical records, but the documents no longer exist in the Galactic Library. The reference to them may exist, but any quotations from them do not exist. Remember that Trantor was sacked a few centuries ago. The library was left untouched. It was protected by the personnel of the Second Foundation. And it was those personnel who recently discovered that material related to Earth no longer exists. The material was deliberately removed in recent times. Why? Trevise ceased his pacing and looked intently at Dome. If I find Earth, I will find out what it is hiding. Hiding? Hiding or being hidden? Once I find that out, I have the feeling I will know why I have chosen Gaia and Galaxia over our individuality. Then, I presume, I will know, not feel, that I am correct. And if I am correct, he lifted his shoulders hopelessly, then so be it. If you feel that is so, said Dome, and if you feel you must hunt for Earth, then of course we will help you do as much as we can. That help, however, is limited. For instance, we, Gaia, do not know where Earth may be located among the immense wilderness of worlds that make up the galaxy. Even so, said Trevise, I must search. Even if the endless powdering of stars in the galaxy makes the quest seem hopeless, and even if I must do it alone. 2. Trevise was surrounded by the tameness of Gaia. The temperature, as always, was comfortable, and the air moved pleasantly, refreshing but not chilling. Clouds drifted across the sky, interrupting the sunlight now and then, and no doubt if the water vapor level per meter of open land surface dropped sufficiently in this place or that, there would be enough rain to restore it. The trees grew in regular spacings, like an orchard, and did so no doubt all over the world. The land and sea were stocked with plant and animal life in proper numbers and in the proper variety to provide an appropriate ecological balance. And all of them, no doubt, increased and decreased in numbers in a slow sway about the recognized optimum, as did the number of human beings, too. Of all the objects within the purview of Trevise's vision, the only wild card in the deck was his ship, the Far Star. The ship had been cleaned and refurbished efficiently and well by a number of the human components of Gaia. It had been restocked with food and drink. Its furnishings had been renewed or replaced. Its mechanical workings rechecked. Trevise himself had checked the ship's computer carefully. Nor did the ship need refueling, for it was one of the few gravitic ships of the Foundation, running on the energy of the general gravitational field of the galaxy. And that was enough to supply all the possible fleets of humanity for all the eons of their likely existence, without measurable decrease of intensity. 3 months ago, Trevise had been a councilman of Terminus. He had, in other words, been a member of the legislature of the Foundation, and, ex officio, a great one of the galaxy. Was it only 3 months ago? It seemed it was half his 32-year-old lifetime since that had been his post, and his only concern had been whether the Great Selden Plan had been valid or not. Whether the smooth rise of the Foundation from planetary village to galactic greatness had been properly charted in advance or not. Yet in some ways there was no change. He was still a councilman. His status and his privileges remained unchanged, except that he didn't expect he would ever return to Terminus to claim that status and those privileges. He would no more fit into the huge chaos of the Foundation than into the small orderliness of Gaia. He was at home nowhere, an orphan everywhere. His jaw tightened, and he pushed his fingers angrily through his black hair. Before he wasted time bemoaning his fate, he must find Earth. If he survived the search, there would then be time enough to sit down and weep. He might have even better reason then. With determined stolidity, then, he thought back. 3 months before, he and Janov Pellerat, that able, naive scholar, had left Terminus. Pellerat had been driven by his antiquarian enthusiasms to discover the site of long-lost Earth. And Trevise had gone along, using Pellerat's goal as a cover for what he thought his own real aim was. They did not find Earth. They did find Gaia. And Trevise had then found himself forced to make his fateful decision. Now it was he, Trevise, who had turned half-circle, about-face, and was searching for Earth. As for Pellerat, he too had found something he didn't expect. He had found the black-haired, dark-eyed Bliss, the young woman who was Gaia, even as Dome was, and as the nearest grain of sand or blade of grass was. Pellerat, with the peculiar ardor of late middle age, had fallen in love with a woman less than half his years, and the young woman, oddly enough, seemed content with that. It was odd, but Pellerat was surely happy, and Trevise thought resignedly that each person must find happiness in his or her own manner. That was the point of individuality, the individuality that Trevise, by his choice, was abolishing, given time, over all the galaxy. The pain returned. That decision he had made, and had had to make, continued to excoriate him at every moment, and was, "Golan?" The voice intruded on Trevise's thoughts, and he looked up in the direction of the sun, blinking his eyes. "Janov," he said heartily. The more heartily because he did not want Pellerat guessing at the sourness of his thoughts. He even managed a jovial, "You've managed to tear yourself away from Bliss, I see." Pellerat shook his head. The gentle breeze stirred his silky white hair, and his long, solemn face retained its length and solemnity in full. "Actually, old chap, it was she that suggested I see you about what I want to discuss. Not that I wouldn't have wanted to see you on my own, of course, but she seems to think more quickly than I do." Trevise smiled. "It's all right, Janov. You're here to say goodbye, I take it." "Well, no, not exactly. In fact, more nearly the reverse. Golan, when we left Terminus, you and I was intent on finding Earth. I've spent virtually my entire adult life at that task." "And I will carry on, Janov. The task is mine now." "Yes, but it's mine also. Mine still." "But..." Trevise lifted an arm in a vague, all-inclusive gesture of the world about them. Pellerat said in a sudden, urgent gasp, "I want to go with you." Trevise felt astonished. "You can't mean that, Janov. You have Gaia now." "I'll come back to Gaia someday, but I cannot let you alone." "Certainly you can. I can take care of myself." "No offense, Golan, but you don't know enough. It is I who know the myths and legends. I can direct you." "And you'll leave Bliss? Come now." A faint pink colored Pellerat's cheeks. "I don't exactly want to do that, old chap, but she said..." Trevise frowned. "Is it that she's trying to get rid of you, Janov? She promised me..." "No, you don't understand. Please listen to me, Golan. You do have this uncomfortable, explosive way of jumping to conclusions before you hear one out. It's your specialty, I know, and I seem to have a certain difficulty in expressing myself concisely, but..." "Well," said Trevise gently, "suppose you tell me exactly what it is that Bliss has on her mind in just any way you please, and I promise to be very patient." "Thank you. And as long as you're going to be patient, I think I can come out with it right away. You see, Bliss wants to come too." "Bliss wants to come?" said Trevise. "No, I'm exploding again. I won't explode. Tell me, Genoff, why would Bliss want to come along? I'm asking it quietly. She didn't say. She said she wants to talk to you. Then why isn't she here, eh? Pellerat said, I think, that she is rather of the opinion that you are not fond of her, Golan, and she rather hesitates to approach you. I have done my best, old man, to assure her that you have nothing against her. I cannot believe anyone would think anything but highly of her. Still, she wanted me to broach the subject with you, so to speak. May I tell her that you'll be willing to see her, Golan? Of course. I'll see her right now. And you'll be reasonable? You see, old man, she's rather intense about it. She said the matter was vital, and she must go with you. She didn't tell you why, did she? No, but if she thinks she must go, so must Gaia. Which means I mustn't refuse. Is that right, Genoff? Yes, I think you mustn't, Golan. 3. For the first time during his brief stay on Gaia, Trevise entered Bliss's house, which now sheltered Pellerat as well. Trevise looked about briefly. On Gaia, houses tended to be simple, with the all but complete absence of violent weather of any kind, with the temperature mild at all times in this particular latitude, with even the tectonic plates slipping smoothly when they had to slip, there was no point in building houses designed for elaborate protection, or for maintaining a comfortable environment within an uncomfortable one. The whole planet was a house, so to speak, designed to shelter its inhabitants. Bliss's house within that planetary house was small. The windows screened rather than glassed, the furniture sparse and gracefully utilitarian. There were holographic images on the walls, one of them of Pellerat looking rather astonished and self-conscious. Trevise's lips twitched, but he tried not to let his amusement show, and he fell to adjusting his waist sash meticulously. Bliss watched him. She wasn't smiling in her usual fashion. Rather, she looked serious, her fine dark eyes wide, her hair tumbling to her shoulders in a gentle black wave. Only her full lips, touched with red, lent a bit of color to her face. "Thank you for coming to see me, Trev." Genoff was very urgent in his request. "Blissano Biarella?" Bliss smiled briefly. "Well returned. If you will call me Bliss, a decent monosyllable, I will try to say your name in full, Trevise." She stumbled almost unnoticeably over the second syllable. Trevise held up his right hand. "That would be a good arrangement. I recognize the Gaian habit of using one-syllable name portions in the common interchange of thoughts. So if you should happen to call me Trev now and then, I will not be offended. Still, I will be more comfortable if you try to say Trevise as often as you can, and I shall say Bliss." Trevise studied her, as he always did when he encountered her. As an individual, she was a young woman in her early 20s. As part of Gaia, however, she was thousands of years old. It made no difference in her appearance, but it made a difference in the way she spoke sometimes, and in the atmosphere that inevitably surrounded her. Did he want it this way for everyone who existed? No. Surely no, and yet... Bliss said, "I will get to the point. You stressed your desire to find Earth." "I spoke to Dome," said Trevise, determined not to give in to Gaia without a perpetual insistence on his own point of view. "Yes, but in speaking to Dome, you spoke to Gaia and to every part of it, so that you spoke to me, for instance." "Did you hear me as I spoke?" No, for I wasn't listening. But if thereafter I paid attention, I could remember what you said. Please accept that and let us go on. You stressed your desire to find Earth and insisted on its importance. I do not see that importance, but you have the knack of being right. So we, Gaia, must accept what you say. If the mission is crucial to your decision concerning Gaia, it is of crucial importance to Gaia. And so Gaia must go with you, if only to try to protect you. When you say Gaia must go with me, you mean you must go with me. Am I correct? I am Gaia, said Bliss simply. But so is everything else on and in this planet. Why then you? Why not some other portion of Gaia? Because Pell wishes to go with you, and if he goes with you, he would not be happy with any other portion of Gaia than myself. Pellerat, who sat rather unobtrusively on a chair in another corner, with his back, Trevise noted, to his own image, said softly, That's true, Golan. Bliss is my portion of Gaia. Bliss smiled suddenly. It seems rather exciting to be thought of in that way. It's very alien, of course. Well, let's see. Trevise put his hands behind his head and began to lean backward in his chair. The thin legs creaked as he did so, so that he quickly decided the chair was not sturdy enough to endure that game and brought it down to all 4 feet. Will you still be part of Gaia if you leave her? I need not be. I can isolate myself, for instance, if I seem in danger of serious harm, so that harm will not necessarily spill over into Gaia, or if there is any other overriding reason for it. That, however, is a matter of emergency only. Generally, I will remain part of Gaia. Even if we jump through hyperspace? Even then, though that will complicate matters somewhat. Somehow I don't find that comforting. Why not? Trevise wrinkled his nose in the usual metaphoric response to a bad smell. It means that anything that is said and done on my ship that you hear and see will be heard and seen by all of Gaia. I am Gaia. So what I see, hear, and sense, Gaia will see, hear, and sense. Exactly. Even that wall will see, hear, and sense. Bliss looked at the wall he pointed to and shrugged. Yes, that wall too. It has only an infinitesimal consciousness, so that it senses and understands only infinitesimally. But I presume there are some subatomic shifts in response to what we are saying right now, for instance, that enable it to fit into Gaia with more purposeful intent for the good of the whole. But what if I wish privacy? I may not want the wall to be aware of what I say or do. Bliss looked exasperated, and Pellerat broke in suddenly. You know, Golan, I don't want to interfere, since I obviously don't know much about you. Still, I've been with Bliss, and I've gathered somehow some of what it's all about. If you walk through a crowd on Terminus, you see and hear a great many things, and you may remember some of it. You might even be able to recall all of it under the proper cerebral stimulation. But mostly you don't care. You let it go. Even if you watch some emotional scene between strangers, and even if you're interested, still, if it's of no great concern to you, you let it go. You forget. It must be so on Gaia, too. Even if all of Gaia knows your business intimately, that doesn't mean that Gaia necessarily cares. Isn't that so, Bliss dear? I've never thought of it that way, Pell, but there is something in what you say. So this privacy Trev talks about, I mean Trevise, is nothing we value at all. In fact, we, Gaia, find it incomprehensible. To want to be not part, to have your voice unheard, your deeds unwitnessed, your thoughts unsensed? Bliss shook her head vigorously. I said that we can block ourselves off in emergencies, but who would want to live that way, even for an hour? I would, said Trevise. That is why I must find Earth. To find out the overriding reason, if any, that drove me to choose this dreadful fate for humanity. It is not a dreadful fate, but let us not debate the matter. I will be with you, not as a spy, but as a friend and helper. Gaia will be with you, not as a spy, but as a friend and helper. Trevise said somberly, Gaia could help me best by directing me to Earth. Slowly, Bliss shook her head. Gaia doesn't know the location of Earth. Dome has already told you that. I don't quite believe that. After all, you must have records. Why have I never been able to see those records during my stay here? Even if Gaia honestly doesn't know where Earth might be located, I might gain some knowledge from the records. I know the galaxy in considerable detail, undoubtedly much better than Gaia does. I might be able to understand and follow hints in your records that Gaia perhaps doesn't quite catch. But what records are these you talk of, Trevise? Any records. Books, films, recordings, telegraphs, artifacts, whatever it is you have. In the time I've been here, I haven't seen one item that I would consider in any way a record. Have you, Genoff?
No, said Pellerat hesitantly, but I haven't really looked.
Yet I have, in my quiet way, said Trevise, and I've seen nothing. Nothing. I can only suppose they're being hidden from me. Why, I wonder? Would you tell me that?
Bliss's smooth young forehead wrinkled into a puzzled frown.
Why didn't you ask before this? We, Gaia, hide nothing, and we tell no lies. An individual in isolation, might tell lies. He is limited, and he is fearful because he is limited. Gaia, however, is a planetary organism of great mental ability and has no fear. For Gaia to tell lies, to create descriptions that are at variance with reality, is totally unnecessary. Trevise snorted. Then why have I carefully been kept from seeing any records? Give me a reason that makes sense.
Of course.
She held out both hands, palms up, before her.
We don't have any records.
4.
Pellerat recovered first, seeming the less astonished of the two. My dear, he said gently, that is quite impossible. You cannot have a reasonable civilization without records of some kind.
Bliss raised her eyebrows.
I understand that. I merely mean we have no records of the type that Trevise is talking about, or was at all likely to come across. We, Gaia, have no writings, no printings, no films, no computer databanks, nothing. We have no carvings on stone, for that matter. That's all I'm saying. Naturally, since we have none of these, Trevise found none of these.
Trevise said, What do you have, then, if you don't have any records that would recognize as records?
Bliss said, enunciating carefully, as though she were speaking to a child.
We, Gaia, have a memory. I remember.
What do you remember? Asked Trevise.
Everything.
You remember all reference data?
Certainly.
For how long? For how many years back?
For indefinite lengths of time.
You could give me historical data, biographical, geographical, scientific, even local gossip.
everything. All in that little head.
Trevise pointed sardonically at Bliss's right temple.
No, she said. Gaia's memories are not limited to the contents of my particular skull. See here.
For the moment she grew formal, and even a little stern, as she ceased being Bliss solely, and took on an amalgam of other units.
There must have been a time before the beginning of history when human beings were so primitive that, although they could remember events, they could not speak. Speech was invented and served to express memories and to transfer them from person to person. Writing was eventually invented in order to record memories and transfer them across time from generation to generation. All technological advance since then has served to make more room for the transfer and storage of memories, and to make the recall of desired items easier. However, once individuals joined to form Gaia, all that became obsolete. We can return to memory, the basic system of record-keeping on which all else is built. Do you see that?
Trevise said,
Are you saying that the sum total of all brains on Gaia can remember far more data than a single brain can?
Of course.
But if Gaia has all the records spread through the planetary memory, what good is that to you as an individual portion of Gaia?
All the good you can wish.
Whatever I might want to know is in an individual mind somewhere, maybe in many of them. If it is very fundamental, such as the meaning of chair, it is in every mind. But even if it is something esoteric that is in only one small portion of Gaia's mind, I can call it up if I need it, though such recall may take a bit longer than if the memory is more widespread.